Reading Glasses, a show about book culture and literary life designed to help you read better. I'm author and book devourer Mallory O'Meara.
And I'm Bria Grant, filmmaker and e-reader. This episode, we're talking about things that take you out of a book and how to get back in it, and we're interviewing author Sylvain Nouvel.
But first, what are you reading, Bria?
So, you know, I just went on this long-ass road trip. I went from California to Dallas and back.
But you love being a woman on a journey on a road.
I'm truly the heroine of my own journey. But I listened to a book on the way back that people have recommended on the show, although I have questions because I may have listened to the wrong book. But the one I listened to was great. I looked at it up and I was like, 16 hours? That seems like a good idea for a 20-something hour road trip.
Was this like you reading two versions of Neighbor Sex or Being Neighborly?
Maybe. The book is The Seven or Eight Deaths of Stella Fortuna by Juliette Grahams.
Did it just come out?
No, no, no. And the author is Lisa Flanagan. It came out in 2019. There's another book with some kind of deaths, The Seven Deaths.
Somebody needs to stop to put a moratorium on books with a insert number here, deaths of insert woman's name here.
Actually, you know what the other one is something.
It's The Husbands.
It's The Husbands. The Seven Husbands
of Evelyn. Seven and a half deaths of someone.
No, it's The Seven Husbands. The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo. This is The Seven or Eight Deaths of Stella Fortuna. And it was fucking great. It was so good. I started listening to it and then I didn't want to listen to anything else. So I just listened to the whole thing like straight through. I didn't even I occasionally put on some music or something, but I thought I'd listen to a bunch of podcasts, but no. Instead, I just listened to this life of Stella Fortuna because I had to know. Basically, she had a very wrought life, a very difficult life, as you can imagine. It's written from the point of view of her granddaughter, who's telling the story of Stella, who grew up in this very small Italian village. And it's all about, the number of times – it's kind of divided into the number of times she almost died. There was, a cooking eggplant accident and a pig accident. But then there's also, one where she,
You sound like very Italian ways
to
die.
Yeah.
Oh, no, a pepperoni accident. Oh, no, too much spaghetti accident.
But, as she almost died – I choked on a pepperoncini. But as she almost dies, she gets tougher and tougher, and her life is tough. This is not an easy life she is living, and she has this horrible, abusive father, and eventually they immigrate to America, and it's in the 1940s, I believe, when they immigrate to America. So you can imagine it's a tough time to be an immigrant. It is fantastic. I loved it. You really get into the head of Stella and her life choices, but also she's just a tough lady. She never wanted to get married. She didn't really she just wanted to be left alone her whole life. And then she keeps almost dying. And it's just really
what a mood.
A really great, well done literary fiction book. I don't know who recommended it. I think multiple people on the show have recommended it. And I just can't say enough good things about it. It's so good. I loved it. What are you reading, Mallory?
So I am reading, I don't want to call it a fluffy book, but it's definitely a nice lighter book. If folks are looking for, we've gone through some heavy things already this year in 2021. It's called The Secret Women by Sheila Williams, and it's adorable. So it's these three women and they all meet in this yoga class one day. And they're all kind of bonding over how they're rolling their eyes at the yoga class, and they become friends, and they find out that the thing that they all have in common is their mother has just passed away. And what they start doing is once a month they meet up for margaritas and talking and kind of getting over over this loss, but also at the same time they're each individually going through their mother's things and kind of realizing that their moms had secrets and secret parts of their life. And it's really interesting to see that these three women are really bonding and also kind of looking at their mother's lives and looking at their mom, now that they're older, looking at their mom's lives in a completely different light. Mm-hmm. Now that they're going through some of the same things that their moms went through, and realizing that if their moms had each just had each other, like had a close group of women, they would have been able to deal with things better, get through different things. It's just really nice. It's really a good light. It sounds weird me saying, oh, this book about mothers dying is a light read, but it's dealt with in a way that isn't super heavy or sad. And also, like, they're all doing it over margaritas together. It's just really cute and nice, yeah. And I'm enjoying it. So that's The Secret Women by Sheila Williams.
And mine is The Seven or Eight Deaths of Stella Fortuna by Juliet Grahams. The one I listened to was read by Lisa Flanagan. She was great.
So we want to take a moment to share some listener feedback. And before I read these, I just want to say right now, one, thank you to everyone. So many people wrote in with Bible fiction recs that there's no possible way I could respond to all of them. But I read all of them. I am very grateful. Some people recommended great books like Lamb by Christopher Moore, which is
I love that book. It's great.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But a bunch of other people wrote in with like different versions of the Bible that are easier to read. Someone wrote in and told me about a graphic novel version of the Bible, which is amazing. And also another group of listener recommendations we'll never be able to get to, but I wanted to talk about on the show is after we talked about how we feel about 5-star and 3-star four-star reviews, we got immediately the hour that the podcast dropped, we had people writing in either saying, oh my God, my skin crawls thinking about giving a book 3 stars, or saying, what's wrong with 3 stars? 3 stars is totally fine. It means that I liked it. And it just has the listener feedback is still coming in about it. And it does not fail to make me laugh every time because it's so polarizing. So many people are like, yes, 3 stars are totally fine. So many other people are like, no, never 3 stars. So very interesting to me.
That's super funny. I know like sometimes people will tag me in reviews and they've given something I've done 3 stars. And I'm like, why would you tag me in this? Like, obviously you didn't like it. Like, do you want me to know you didn't like it? But now I'm going to try to view that in a different light. I think, you know.
I never read any of my reviews ever. I learned my lesson after one time I got tagged. Like, I never read anything. This is a tangent, but I just never read. I didn't even read the review that I got in the New York Times, like, for Lady from the Black Lagoon. I read nothing. But one time somebody tagged me on something and I was like, fine, I'll just look at it. It was a YouTube video, and the first thing was she was talking about how badly I recorded the audiobook, and I was like, okay, never mind. But now if anything like that ever crosses my path, I will try to think about it a little differently. But then Allison wrote in about Amish romances because we had someone who had that in their wheelhouse. And Allison says, yes, Amish romances are a huge thing. I work in a public library and these series are pretty popular. But I know that there are other communities where they're even more in demand. Amish romance is, of course, a subsection of Christian romance, which is very popular in my library and something I did not know. Sometimes you'll get a request for very specific genres like Christian fiction that takes place in America in the 1700s. And maybe you have to fill that request only in large print or CD audiobook format due to accessibility issues. It can be hard to keep up with the demand sometimes, but luckily there are a ton of authors out there writing these books. Wanda E. Brunsetter and Beverly Lewis are particularly well known for their Amish series. And yes, my library still circulates a relatively large number of audiobooks on CD, and part of my job is deciding which ones to purchase. I also do the purchasing for adult fiction, and it is the absolute best part of my job. I am so curious about Amish romances. I think I kind of have to read one now.
I would love it. I would love the feedback. We'll do it. We could talk about it. I would love to hear about it. By the way, this is so funny because, you know, I just went on this road trip and my brother offered me some audiobooks on CD. And I was like, how do you own those? Like, why do you own these? I was like, I don't want this. But it was just so weird. Like that, I guess that obviously people still use them.
A lot of truckers use them. If you go to like a rest stop in like the middle of the country, you'll see a rack of audiobooks on CD.
Yeah, sure. So Gabby wrote in about ghostwriters. I was listening to the episode on ghostwriters and the Christmas gift guide and this is about our celebrity memoir one, and wanted to share my thoughts on how to best credit a ghostwriter. I consider myself a ghostwriter because I write short memoirs of for other people in their voice in first person. However, I do get credit on the copyright page, which seems like a win-win for everyone. Their name appears on the cover as it's their story, and I get credit, though no ownership, for the effort I spent interviewing, uncovering, and writing the story. I should mention this is through a company called Story Terrace and marketed towards everyday people who want to capture and publish their story, and not everyone goes on to sell the book. It's definitely a big gift, but maybe something some glassers might be interested in. Everyone has a story to tell. Here's the link if you want to check it out, which we'll put in our show notes, and the link to Gabby's page as well. That's very cool. That's super cool.
I think that'd be a really interesting gift to get, like, an older family member, you know?
Yeah, it's a bit
who's, like, always telling interesting stories and,
yeah,
you know, might want to pass those on, but don't. They aren't able or don't want to, like, sit down and write a whole fucking book.
Mm-hmm. It's a bit like StoryWorth. I have a follow-up on the Celebrity Memoir podcast, Celebrity Book Club podcast that we had Chelsea on from. She actually had a ghostwriter on an episode, on the Sheila E. episode. So it wasn't the ghostwriter of the Sheila E. book, but it was a woman who does ghostwrite, and it was fascinating because she talked about ghostwriting and she talked about the interviews she does. We should have her on our show because it was just so cool to hear her talk about ghostwriting for celebrities and how they're like, here's some crazy stories. You can't put them in the book. Like, they That's tell her incredible. Stories and then she's like, awesome. And they're like, don't put that in the book. So that was really interesting.
So I guess being a celebrity ghostwriter is the number one job to do if you love gossip.
Yeah, totally. But if you can also keep a secret.
And then Skylar wrote in with a wheelhouse that is women murderers, mm-hmm. not people who murder women, women who do the murdering.
Got it.
Amazing. YA rom-coms that don't feature miscommunication as a major plot point. Fiction about people who have absurd amounts of money. An adult dystopia that isn't quite sci-fi but borders on it.
Yeah, total same. Quick bookmark for me. If you are in America, you can watch my movie 12-Hour Shift. It goes to Hulu, I think, like, this week. It goes to Hulu first week of February. So if you haven't paid for it to watch it and you're waiting to watch it for free and you have a subscription to Hulu, I think you have to have a subscription, you can watch it now for free. And I would encourage you to do that because it helps me. If you've already watched it, just put it on in the background and let it play through a few times. That would be amazing. And if you're in the UK, you can also get it now, I think, on SVOD, meaning you can, like, pay for it on various services, or you can get it on DVD Blu-ray as well.
And we've had so many glassers write in to tell us how much they love 12-Hour Shift. So that's don't nice. Take our word for it. Take your fellow glassers word for it. I also have a bookmark. This is the week that my book, Lady from the Black Lagoon, comes out in the UK. So if you're a UK listener, you can buy Lady from the Black Lagoon at your local bookstore from bookshop.org in the UK. I'll put a link in the show notes. I'm really excited to finally have this book out in the UK. And thank you. I've seen some folks who've already pre-ordered it over there, and I really, really appreciate it. You can email us at readingglassespodcast@gmail.com. If you want a list of all the books we talk about on the show delivered to your inbox every month, you can sign up for our newsletter. There's a link in the show notes. And before we talk about things that take us out of a book, we're going to take a quick break.
Hi, it's Sean here, and I'm reading both Flesh and Not, which is a collection of essays by David Foster Wallace, and has only served to solidify the fact that I much prefer his essays to his narrative works.
Bria, what is your favorite part about your cats?
Oh, probably their cute faces.
But what's your least favorite part about your cats? Oh,
that's easy to answer. My least favorite part is definitely cleaning out the litter box.
Well, it's great that Reading Glasses is sponsored in part this week by Kitty Poo Club.
We love Kitty Poo Club.
Yes, Kitty Poo Club is the litter box solution for you. It is an all-in-one litter box solution designed to be convenient. Every month, Kitty Poo Club delivers an affordable, high-quality, recyclable litter box that's pre-filled with the litter of your choice. And when the month is up, you just recycle the box and Kitty Poo Club will automatically deliver a new one to you. You don't have to change used litter. You don't have to clean the box. It is genius.
It is completely fantastic. They have a cute little video. And when you get your box, you can watch this little video so you can go, oh, this is all I have to do. You just put the litter in the box, and the box is sealed. Even though it is a recyclable box, it's sealed. So you don't have to worry about pee or anything leaking through the bottom.
Yes, and I will attest to this. Both Sailor and Lula used the box at the same time. Like, not at the same time in the very, like, they were peeing in tandem, but they were both using it during the every time we've used Kitty Poo Club, and it's never leaked. It was on top of the carpet in my living room. It has never leaked. I feel like Kitty Poo Club looked at a list of all the things that suck about litter boxes, and they solved them all. You don't have to go out and buy and like carry a 40-pound bag of litter up to your house. You don't have to scrub out the box every few months. You don't have to scoop out the litter. It is really, really great at odor control. Like, all the things that are annoying about litter boxes, Kitty Poo Club has solved for you.
So give yourself the gift that keeps on giving the whole year, a Kitty Poo Club subscription. Right now, Kitty Poo Club is offering you 20% off your first order when you set up auto ship by going to kittypooclub.com and entering promo glasses.
Yeah, so that means you'll sign up for Kitty Poo Club. Every month they'll deliver you your box. You can pick what kind of litter that you want. I used the all natural soy litter, and it was amazing. So good at odor control. And that means that you never have to worry about buying litter ever again. You never have to remember it. You never have to go, oh God, I've scooped the box and now there's barely anything in there. And now I have to rush over to go get some litter from the store and carry this giant bag. It just comes right to your door. It's incredible. So you go to kittypooclub.com and enter promo code GLASSES to get 20% off when you set up auto ship. That's kittypooclub.com. And don't forget to enter promo code GLASSES at checkout.
Glasses.
Glasses.
Hey there, beautiful people. Did you hear that good, good news?
Something about the baby Jesus?
He's coming back!
Or do you mean the fact that Apple Podcasts has named Fanti one of the best shows of 2020?
I mean, we already knew that we was hot stuff, but a little external validation never hurts, okay?
Hosted by me, writer and journalist Jared Hill.
And me, the ebony enchantress myself, Javel Anderson.
Fanti is your home for complex conversations about the gray areas in our lives, the people, places, and things we're huge fans of, but got some anti-feelings toward.
You name it, we Fanti. Nobody's off limits.
Check us out every Thursday on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your Slayworthy audio.
This week, we all have that one thing. We're not talking about an author being racist or something. We're referring to that thing you're really knowledgeable or nerdy about that an author gets wrong and you get completely taken out of a book. What do you do when this happens? And is it possible to ignore it and get back in? First off, it's always okay to dump a book if you want to. There is no shame in getting knocked out of a book and being unable to get back into it. It's okay. You are not being too picky or ridiculous. It's fine. But that being said, Bria, what kind of things will knock you out of a book?
I mean, mine is probably pretty obvious. It's usually film industry stuff, like the audition process or filmmaking, which is so weird because honestly, like, every movie is its own special little snowflake. And so every process is different. And I'm always surprised, like, when people are like, this is a total sidebar, but when people are like, how did you get your first movie financed that I made like 7 years ago? And I'm like, oh, totally easy. You get on a really successful TV show after many years of auditioning. You make friends. You go and do an indie movie that never comes out. You make friends with those financiers, and that's how I got it financed. I mean, like, so it's just like every process is obviously very different. That being said, it takes me out of it. If it feels so foreign to me that I'm like, I don't know, this is what I do for a living, which is probably why I don't read that many books about filmmakers when that is like the premise and it's a fiction book. But it's also why I loved Plain Bad Heroines, because I feel like that book really got it right in a lot of ways. And there are parts of it that I'm like, oh, I've never been in this experience, but I could see how this would work. But there's so many things that I was like, that is what it's like being on a set where you like are like, oh, I heard there was a yellow jacket attack over in the grip truck or whatever. And you're like, interesting. You know, like, that is what it's like. Yeah. So I feel like that one did a really good job. What stuff knocks you out of a book?
I think everyone is really nerdy about one or maybe a few things enough to spot errors in a book. Mine are definitely animal science stuff. Like it always bothers me. I can always tell if like there's a scene with like somebody's pet or like a wild animal, and I'm just like, an animal would not do that. Are you kidding me? It's actually something that really drives me nuts about a lot of wolf things. Like I hate the movie The Grey. Like most people don't realize like it takes like basically a wolf has to have rabies to attack you. Mm. It's so wolf attacks. More people are killed every more people and animals are attacked in America every year by vultures than they are by wolves. Like, so it gets, it drives me really, really nuts when it's just like a pack of wolves attacking a person. Like that never happens. Filmmaking stuff, just like you. And now booze knowledge, because I am like a walking external hard drive of booze knowledge because of girly drinks. And I get it. Being an author is wicked hard. Trust me. I know that research is very fucking difficult. But sometimes I'm just like, oh, God, this is so glaring. I am like, it's like an ejector seat in like a spy movie, like a button. Like I have I'm sitting in a chair and I've shot through the roof out of this book. And I can like it's tough.
Well, Mallory, let me ask you, what about grammar errors or misspellings? Does that bother you?
No, not
me
at
neither,
all.
Actually.
And it's interesting because we do get a lot of listener feedback from folks who cannot stand typos and it just knocks them out. For me, it doesn't bother me. One, because I'm an author and I know that these things just absolutely fucking happen. But on the other hand, like it just doesn't, I don't know what it is. It just doesn't bother me. Mm. Does it bother you?
Mm-mm, not really, but I'm sure it does bother some people.
But so this happens. You're reading something. There's an error that is so glaring that it has knocked you out of the reading trance. Can you get back in when this happens, Priya?
I usually can't. I usually can't get back in. I mean, it's just important for me to be able to buy the premise, because I'm talking about like not a specific like. It feels to me like I'm talking about like if the premise feels incorrect to me, which is really funny coming from a lady who's like, I want to read about like talking dogs in space. But for some reason, I'm like, I buy that. But if it's like, I don't know, if it's a small thing, I can kind of like be on board for it. Yeah. But most of the time, this is not a problem for me because I'm reading books that create their own reality. So that most of the time they're like, this is the reality you're living in. This is the stakes. These are the stakes. This is the talking dog. By the way, I never read talking dog books, but it's a good example. This is the it talks.
Didn't I get you a talking dog book when we went and did that event in San Diego?
You did. It's still sitting on my shelf. I haven't read it yet. It's a physical book.
It's like a talking space
long.
Dog.
Yeah, totally.
Gregory Van Eekhout. I remember seeing it because I know Greg and I was like, oh, he wrote a book about a talking dog in space. I have to buy that for
But that book, I'm like, okay, well, you're giving me, here's the reality points, you know? And so I think it's when, I think like, if you mess with your own rules you've set up, I do not appreciate it. But if you stick to the rules, I'll pretty much keep reading it. It's when like I feel like the rules have been broken, or it's something I know so well that I'm like, ugh, that I can't keep reading it. I'm not excited about it at that point. What about you? Do you get back into a book, or are you done?
It kind of hinges on a couple things. One, you know, how good the writing is. If it's like a wicked good book and I'm already really, really invested in it, and I can usually just sort of go like, ugh, look at this fucking thing, and then go back to reading it. Also, it depends on how much the plot hinges on this particular thing. I read one book recently that took place in LA, and there was a big error in regards to like traveling around the city. And it made me laugh really hard, and I was definitely taking out of my reading trance. And I was like, Jeremy, look, this character thinks that she can get from Venice to Los Feliz in this amount of time. Hilarious. On a Saturday. But it wasn't a major plot point, and the book was really, really good, and I was able to get back into reading quickly. However, there was another book I read recently, and you tried to read it too. You'll know the one I'm talking about. We'll never reveal the name of it. That had to do with filmmaking, and the author made I think to someone who has worked in film, it was such a huge mistake that basically made the rest of the book make no sense. Mm-hmm. It was one of those things where if this one particular fact was true, all of the other facts about this one thing were null and void. Like it just completely threw everything out. And it was so distracting to me because then later on, like a chapter later, the author would say something about this one particular thing. I'd be like, that can't be true because of this other thing that you said it was. And it just completely threw me out, and I could not get back into it.
Wait, did you finish that book? You didn't, right?
I skimmed through some of it, but no, I didn't finish it.
Yeah, I didn't finish it either.
Yeah, you know the one I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. But one of the differences was, though, that the second book wasn't great already, so I wasn't that enmeshed in the story. So if you think that there's an error in a book that's so distracting, I think it might be a sign that you weren't super into the book anyways.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think also because I'm looking for, like, escapist stuff, I'm not even looking to read stuff that really is about, like, what I do on a day-to-day basis for the most part, unless it's, like, a memoir or a history book or something.
Eating almonds. a memoir by Bria Grant.
I love eating almonds. But I give me that almond book. But I think... Yeah, I mean, I think that that's part of it, too, is that I'm not really picking up books that I'm going to be an expert in anyway. Like, I want someone to create an entirely new world that I don't know the rules of, because if I know the rules too well, I'm like, ugh, why am I reading this? I could just go to work.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Bria, do you ever tell people about these things when you're talking about the book? Do you, like, give a little content warning?
Oh, yes. I feel like it's my responsibility as an expert to tell them about the book, and then to say, maybe this won't bother you. But honestly, it's not a bigger problem. I'm telling you, I do not finish these kinds of books. If I am taken out of a book, the whole reason I'm there is to escape. If I'm taking out of it, I'm not going to keep reading it. So it's kind of like I can't recommend the book anyway.
You have to escape from the escapist books?
Yeah, exactly. What about you? Do you tell people, do you give people like the caveat of like, just so you know, do you have a trigger warning for... for incorrect information?
I always feel weird about it because, like, what if they like the book and they totally don't know the mistake, and by pointing it out, I'm ruining it for them?
Oh, I don't think you are, though. I don't think you are. Because there's so many movies like this where people are like, that would never happen. And I'm like, don't care. Like, I don't care because I am such a, like, if I don't know about it, like, what the fuck do I care?
Like, there's one book I'm thinking of where there was, this happened, and a friend of ours loved this book. And when I finished it, I wanted to text this person and be like, but this thing was wrong, but I didn't want to ruin it for them. Mm. So I just, like, I only ever mention stuff like that to other people who are reading the book and will know what I'm talking about. Like, I texted you immediately about this other book I'm talking about, and you were like, oh, yeah, I totally agree.
By the way,
I stopped reading it.
You've said, like, three books that you're, like, in this book, and it's like, there's so many, you gotta, this is what, book A, B, or C that you're, wait, this
this is the book that... it made a filmmaking error.
Ah, yes. Okay. Yes.
And there's another book that the book that I talked about that had a traveling around LA error. And I recommended the book to Jeremy, and he got to that part and he was like, yeah, this is silly. But he still, like, read it and enjoyed it. It's interesting to think about weird mistakes that I might be missing in books because, yeah, I don't know about, like, nursing or genetics or whatever. Like, I don't want to know. Like, if an author makes a mistake about, I don't know, fucking math or some shit, like, don't fucking tell me. I don't want to know. So I always feel weird about, like, what if you're going to really like this book and me telling you this one thing that I'm particularly nerdy about is going to ruin it for you?
It would not bother me. Like, if I was reading a book and it had a lot of math in it and someone was like, just so you know, the math doesn't work out in that book, I'd be like, I don't give a shit. Like, if I love
I don't care about math.
What? I'm not here for a math lesson. I'm not in seventh grade. I'm here to read this goddamn book, and it's entertaining me. Like, but here's the thing. I also, as we all know, it's hard to spoil stuff for me. It's very hard.
It's true.
Like, if I like something, I'm like, I like it, and you can't spoil it for me. It's very, you're going to have to, like, really go out of your way. You can tell me the end. I'm still here for it.
Yeah, that's really funny. Oh, that's interesting. Maybe because I am such a spoiler person. Although, I guess I wouldn't even want to know afterwards. Like, don't retroactively spoil things for me. Like, I don't want to think of... I don't want my, like, thinking about the book to be tainted by, oh, God, this, like, one thing is, like, totally not right and would have thrown everything off. You know what I mean?
Interesting. So that's why you feel like you don't want to tell people if there is a mistake. You would not tell someone that unless it's, and you're like, oh, we both know about filmmaking, so that would be a tough thing for you to swallow. Yeah.
Yes. I would only tell somebody about it unless they share that particular, like, oeuvre of knowledge. Mm-hmm. I would never tell someone who, like, had never made did not work in film about this particular thing. Because, again, the person that I'm taught, the book that I'm referring to that you and I both tried to read,
Book A from now on.
Book A. So the person that we know that read it and loved it has never worked in film. and yeah, yeah. absolutely love this book.
Sure, sure, sure.
And I don't want to ruin it for said person.
Well, give me their number. Give me their number because I'd like to call it them and ruin it.
You have their number.
Oh, okay.
I will never reveal who this person is. But I'm very interested to see what the Glassers think. So send your thoughts on what knocks you out of a book to readingglassespodcast@gmail.com. Before we interview author Sylvain Nouvel about his new book, we're going to take a quick break.
I'm Jesse Thorne. On the next Bullseye, we've got the one and only Ted Danson. We'll talk about his new show, Mr. Mayor, about Cheers, and about the secret to success in comedy.
I mean, I feel like one of your signature comedic moves at this point in your career is gazing. You do a lot of interesting gazing.
I also love this. Gazing. I love that. And if I'm not, I'm going to start because that's great.
That's Bullseye. Find it on MaximumFun.org, NPR.org, and wherever you get podcasts.
I'm here with author Sylvain Nouvel, whose name I'm totally butchering, and I apologize. Thank you for coming on the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
What are you reading right now?
I am reading. It's funny because I normally don't read much when I'm writing, and I'm working on the next books in the series right now, but I read a bunch of books. I finished The Oppenheimer Alternative by Robert J. Sawyer. It's world's best scientist band together to save the Earth. And every character in that book is a famous scientist. It's amazing. I finished The Future Is Yours by Dan Frey. That comes out super soon. I think February 9th, the week after mine. It's I think you should go in that one blind, but it's an epistolary sci-fi, something I know a little bit about. I read Django Wexler's upcoming novella called Hard Reboot about giant robots beating the crap out of each other. Really fun. What else did I read? There's a sci-fi by David Yoon coming out later this year, maybe spring, called Version Zero, about a bunch of friends taking down big tech. That's also pretty good. Yeah. I liked it a lot. So I've been lucky with books so far.
Yeah, cool. Awesome. Well, can you tell us about your new book, A History of What Comes Next?
Well, yeah. It's about, well, the entire series is about these pairs of mothers and daughters, genetically identical, who've been around for a while. They've been messing with history for about 3,000 years, trying to take us to the stars before something really bad happens and we all die. And this book, A History of What Comes Next, follows the 99th generation of these badass women. The mother's called Sarah, the daughter's called Mia. And it takes place at the end of the Second World War, when they are at the very beginning of the space race. Well, they're pretty much trying to create a space race and move us upwards faster than we were. It's full of history.
I loved it. I absolutely loved it. Yeah, I loved it. It was so good. People should definitely check this out. And there's more coming in the series. Is that what you're working on right now?
Yeah. First of all, thank you. but yeah, every book in the series follows a generation. So the daughter in the first book is going to be the mother in the second book. And by then we'll be in the 70s and 80s.
Awesome. So this book involved so much research. It's so much so that you actually had an additional section in the back to talk about history and talk about all the research that you did. Did it take a long time to research, and what all did that involve?
Well, every book of mine involved like a truckload of research. But for the other ones, like for the Themis Files, I mostly researched things. I figured out very soon in my writing career that I don't know anything about anything. but the Themis Files was mostly looking up stuff like how do you mine iridium? What's a good low altitude route to take from Syria to Turkey? You know, how do squirrels hide their nuts? Things like that. So I'd read science papers and weird things. Actually, delving into history involved as much, if not more, research, but for some reason, well, I know the reason, it's history. there's a lot to find on the internet and in books, like especially the Second World War and the beginnings of the space race. There's been so much written about it. So it was actually, it was a lot of work, but it was easier in terms of actually finding what I was looking for.
Yeah, I totally believe that. And you even had a, you had a soundtrack even. Did you do research for the soundtrack, or did you already know those songs, or how did you pick that out?
Oh, hell no. That's just about as much research as the history part. I listened to, well, I knew some songs, but like half the book is in 1945. And right. If you look at the top hits for that year, I mean, a lot of them are not, didn't age that well. so I listened to about, I don't know, 500 songs, because the thing is not just to find good ones. They had to fit the chapters. I tried to write each chapter listening to the matching song, so that it would sort of make sense for you to listen to the song while you're reading the chapter. So yeah, there's tons of research involved in that one. But I discovered so many good songs, though, from the 30s and 40s and 50s. You can look forward to the playlist is available online. It's on Spotify and Apple Music. And you should definitely look forward to the playlist for book two in the 70s, because that one is a trip.
Oh, I love that. I loved having this playlist, and I did exactly that. I listened to the songs while I was reading the chapters, and it made it a really cool experience, I think.
It made it very different for me as a writing experience. It was really fun.
Very cool. So this episode is all about when you're reading and you read something that takes you out of a book or reading experience, like you're reading something and it doesn't make sense, or the science or history isn't correct, which we thought you would have a lot to say about since you do so much research for your books. Does this ever happen to you when you're reading, and what do you do about it?
Well, bad science is never good. I'm generous with the books. I don't ask all the science to be perfect. What bugs me is when there was no need to make the bad science, because you could, if there's a fantastic element or whatever, you can have your characters just being baffled by it and say, you know, how does that work? I don't know. Experts have no clue. and that's it. You didn't have to come up with something that makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. The thing that really will take me out of a book is bad dialogue. It might have something to do with the fact that my books are all super dialogue heavy. But if the dialogue doesn't feel right to me, it takes me out of it.
Yeah, I totally understand that. Your books are very dialogue heavy. I feel like your books could easily translate into plays. They're so dialogue heavy.
Yeah, I mean, the audiobooks for the Themis Files have done so well. They've all been done with a full cast, so they're like a radio play. And I've been lucky, so lucky with audiobooks. The audiobook for History of What Comes Next is also a full cast.
I didn't know that. That's so cool.
It's
wow.
It's going to be amazing. It has a ton of people voicing everyone. I'm also lucky that I get to sort of have my opinion about who the actors should be. And they got an amazing cast together. Plus, there's a further reading section at the end of the book, and I'm the one reading it.
Oh, really? That's super cool. That's very rad. Do you make that decision about whether or not it's read just by one actor, or do you say, is that your choice, that you were like, I want it to be read like a radio play or something?
No, not at all. But no, what no, like, I think every book would be a podcast. totally. I think it really depends on the people who hold the audio rights and what they want to do with it, and how much they trust the project to make a good audiobook. Because there are great books that are going to make an okay audiobook. And there are books that are going to sort of like lend themselves better to make a full cast production. So I think because my books are so heavy on dialogue, it probably influenced your decision a little bit. All I know is I'm really thrilled about it.
No, I love it. That's awesome. People should definitely check that out. So we love to ask people, what is your reader wheelhouse? That's like subjects, tropes, things that always get you to pick up a book when you see it.
I don't know if I have one. I mean, I like cool things. So science will always work if it's interesting science. What else? You know, well, giant robots. but I don't know if that counts. Or giant
that
robots
definitely counts. Yo, yes, definitely. Definitely that counts. It's very specific. We love a specific wheelhouse.
If not, sometimes like it's either an author I love, but if it's someone I don't know, but the premise is really clever and interesting, it will draw me to it, even if it's in a genre I don't normally read.
Oh, cool. Very cool. So where can we find you online and where can people get your book?
Well, they can get the book everywhere, I think. online, you can find me. I'm Neuvel on Twitter, Sylvain Neuvel on Facebook and Instagram. You'll want to Google that to spell it right. I have a website called neuvel.net that I just revamped. I think it looks kind of cool.
Great. Okay. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
Now let's look at some book tech advances and bookish technology. We're going to be testing out two different things today because, again, we are almost coming up on a year of recording reading glasses remotely.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. We have not recorded reading glasses in the same room since last March. So we're still testing out separate things. We are testing out a tablet stand and a tub tray. So Bria, tell us about the tablet stand.
Okay, this is from Roxanne. Thank you, Roxanne. And I will say this tablet stand is more like a tablet arm. It's not a stand. It is like you attach one part of the arm. It's like a...
A tablet grabber?
Yeah, do you call it like a winch? What do you call it when you like can like screw something?
A grabber?
Yeah, but it's like, oh, well, I'll get to it. But anyway, there's a part that grabs. Like a vise. Yeah, a vise. That like grabs like a table. And then it has this little arm that you can like move around. And then you can put your tablet into it or your phone. So in theory, and this is what I think Roxanne uses it for, you could put it up while you're doing other things and you could... I guess you could read a book while you're like, you could attach it and then you can like be hands free. And I don't know.
So you could be like knitting in an armchair.
Yeah.
With your tablet in front of your face. Wow.
Yeah. Or I was going to say like, you could be driving. No. What's something you like?
Eating a messy sandwich.
Eating a messy sandwich. Sure. Yes. You could do all of those things. I think also like maybe, I think Roxanne said she uses it for, recipes, like she puts recipes on her tablet and then you can keep it open and have it like in your kitchen. So that's what it is. It's like this little stand basically it's either tablet size or phone size. It's not any bigger. I don't know what else you'd put in there. A computer? I don't know. So this is pretty much all you need. I at first had so much trouble with the attachment part. I cannot tell you so long being like, this doesn't work. The attachment part doesn't work. And I got really angry and then I put it down and I was like, I'll just come back to this when I have to review it. So I got it back out because we were going to review it. And I figured it out and I'm the dum-dum. It's just like a screw thingy that I just was like trying to do incorrectly. Anyway, it works great. What I did with it, which is not has nothing to do with reading, is I put my phone in it. And I was making dinner and I watched The Office while I was making dinner. And so, because normally I put my computer and I either like listen to a podcast or like I love putting like something that like it doesn't need a lot of thought on like a TV or something or on my computer, but I have to put it up and it takes up valuable counter space because I don't have a big kitchen. So this was perfect because I put my little phone in it and then I could like watch it kind of like out of the corner of my eye or whatever. I think it would also work great if you were doing recipe. I just haven't been doing recipes because I don't know. I'm tired of cooking. But I think it's a really cute little stand. And if you buy this and have trouble with it, just mess with it a little while longer. It's not like, it's like counterintuitive. It's a vise, not a clip. And I kept thinking it was a clip. Does this make sense the way I'm describing this?
Yes.
I thought it was a clip that I could like press on the end and it would open. And I was like, this doesn't work. It's like broken. But really it's like a thing that you like screw down, like you're screwing like someone's head into like a little, till you're squishing it gradually.
It's very interesting to me that that's the example that you can think of. Do you do a lot
of
head squishing?
That's what I think of a vice. When you said vice, that's like what I think of. It's like something you like torture somebody with.
Or like woodwork.
Oh yeah, maybe. I just don't do any woodwork. Anyway.
But you do a lot of head squishing?
I think I read more about head squishing than woodwork. Like, if I'm thinking about it.
Honestly, what, that is the perfect way to describe Bria's reading habits.
Like, if someone was like, here's a book on woodwork, I'd be like, ugh. And then if they're like, here's a book on head squishing, I'd be like, gimme. So-
This is why you're my friend. Oh, hold on. I have a question, though. Could you do it the other way around? Like, could you put a sandwich in the grabber and read and have the sandwich be in front of your face and, like, eat the sandwich while you were reading?
Well, no, because the... That's such a funny visual.
Somebody please make me a sandwich.
That's
elder
so stupid. No,
because, I want this so badly
because it's literally designed to like hold a phone, you know, in the way that it's like it's not like a pincher. It's like a little. I'll put it on our Instagram, but it's like a, you know, like it expands, like it holds just something that's a rectangle shape. If you here's the thing: if you had a rectangle shaped hard sandwich. And it's gonna be hard because the thing like kind of it's like a tough.
You could put a bar of chocolate.
Contraction. Oh yeah, you definitely could put a bar of chocolate.
Bria, please test that out. Please put a bar of chocolate in it while you're and put it on the side of a chair and have it like next to your mouth so you can go and while you're reading.
Yeah, I will do this. Look for this in the next on our Instagram. I'll put it on our Instagram. I will say this is now living in my kitchen though. I really liked it because I was like, oh, I can always have my phone on here and then I'll never lose my phone in the kitchen, which does happen. And like, don't ask me how. So, but yeah, I'm going to give this 5 out of 5 pages in spite of my first initial anger with it. Once I figured out how to use it, it was user error, which is me. Once I figured it out, it was great. I love this thing. It's a great little tablet. If you're looking for, I think there's a lot of people, get back to us with Glassers because I bet there's a ton of people who are like, oh, here's what I would use it for. I do this with my hands while I'm reading or whatever. Mm-hmm. I think you could definitely like find more uses for it. Or like, you know, it would be cool. You could attach it to like your bedside if you want to like lay on your back and read with the book like above. The tablet like above you. You know what I mean?
Oh, that sounds nice.
Because I like to do that sometimes and then my arms get really tired.
That sounds pretty nice
yeah.
though.
Yeah. So I'm going to give this 5 out of 5 pages. I think it was great. You tested out something different. You tested out the tub tray that we were sent last year. I tested it out with an e-reader and I loved it. I thought it was so cute. But you tested it out on print books. How did that go?
So before I rate it, I want to point out that I ran into a weird problem with it that I did not foresee. I'm very nearsighted. Pretty much the only thing I can do without my glasses is read, as long as the book is within a foot of my face, which I call the book zone.
Mm. It's reading in the book zone.
So normally when I read in the tub, I prop my arms up on the side and hold the book like really close to my face because obviously I'm not wearing any glasses. It's too steamy in there. I have to like, so I have the book really close to me. So I got the tray all set up. I had it at the exact midway point of the tub and set my book on it and like leaned back like, ah, relax, I'm going to read. But then I realized the book was too far away for me to see it. Too blurry. So I had to readjust and bring the tray as close to me as I could. So I was like all kind of squished up with it. That being said, I will say, so for what this tray is, 5 out of 5 pages. I was worried it wouldn't fit in my tub because we have one of those like, you know, those like shitty sliding door tubs like in apartment complexes. Hate them. But it did fit because it has a little like, it's adjustable, and when I put it on the narrowest setting, it still fit in my tub, even though it has that like runner for like the shitty sliding doors that I hate so much. But it was nice to have a place to put a drink and not have to like hold my arms at a weird angle to like hold the book up and like balance it on my chest and like keep a little bit of chest skin dry for like a landing pad for my book. I think it's great for print tub readers. I had a little glass of wine from our past sponsor Bright Sellers. It was awesome. I really, really like this. So I think it's safe to say that the tub tray is good for, because I tested this out with both hardcovers and a trade paperback, and it worked great for both. It was awesome. I really, really like it. So 5 out of 5 pages for the tub tray. We already linked to it, but I'll put another link to the one that we bought in the show notes, and it's like wooden. It just looks very nice. and I really, really, really liked it. So if you want us to test out some book tech, you can check out our wish list in the show notes. And if you have some things you want to recommend, send them to readingglassespodcast@gmail.com. And real quick, we do want to thank some new mods on our Facebook group, and just doing a little bit of changes when it comes to thanking the Facebook group, which is like has over 3,000 people in it, which is absolutely bonkers and amazing. And we're so grateful to our Facebook mods, because Bria is not on Facebook, and I have not used Facebook in a while. I barely ever go on there. So we really, really appreciate the folks who do that. So the new mods are Rhiannon and Mari. So welcome and thank you so, so, so much. So thank you to our Facebook group moderators for making it an awesome place for people to talk about reading glasses and get book recommendations. And also Chrissy and Rachel, who moderate our Goodreads page. Remember, you can buy reading glasses tote bags and stickers and shirts in the Maximum Fun store. There's a link in the show notes. And if you like the show, please rate and review us on iTunes. It's great for us. It helps us reach more listeners. It makes us look so, so fancy. And it is the easiest thing that you could do to help us out, because it's free and takes you like less than a minute. You can email us at readingglassespodcast@gmail.com. Find us on Twitter at readinggpodcast, on Instagram at readingglassespodcast. Thanks for listening, and thanks for reading.